God help you if you use voiceover in your work, my friends. God help you. It's flaccid, sloppy writing.
I don't want you to be the guy in the PG-13 movie everyone's really hoping makes it happen. I want you to be like the guy in the rated R movie, you know? The guy you're not sure whether or not you like yet.
All right, hello and welcome to the 55th episode of the Get Your Film Fix podcast. I'm Lee Carlo, and I am joined by Chapin Hemingway from Exterior Films and Peter Mark, a regular on the podcast now, one of the few regulars on the podcast. Today we're going to be talking about the new film in theaters, 50-50, starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Seth Rogen, and we're going to stem off of that with a conversation on comedies within dramas or vice versa and how that works, and then wrap everything up with our top five movies dealing with illness, diseases, something along those lines.
A tumor?
Yes.
Me?
Yes.
that doesn't make any sense, though. I mean, I don't smoke, I don't drink, I recycle.
How do you feel right now?
Fine. You know, I can't remember being so calm in a long time.
Would you describe what you're feeling as a kind of numbness?
I'll describe it as fine.
You're young. Young people beat cancer all the time. Every celebrity beats cancer. Tom Green, Dr. Dexter, Lance Armstrong, he keeps getting it.
I'm moving in.
No, Mom, no.
I'm your mother, no. Adam.
Wait, exactly.
You want to make a room?
Oh. Thanks, I'm all right.
There's weed in him.
Okay, so we went out to see 50-50 this weekend with Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Seth Rogen. I had really been anticipating this movie. I'm a big fan of both those actors, especially JGL. We all are here at Get Your Film Fix. And I started thinking about like a way to intro this, and we always kind of ask a question. We come up with some arbitrary question to ask, and whether or not we're interested in the answer from whoever else is on the podcast. So I decided I was going to ask you guys, or I was going to present something to you guys that I was actually interested in your response, which is just kind of my initial thought on this movie, because I just am curious about your response. So basically, a lot about what I read about this movie is true. I think it's funny, it's sad, it's honest, it's warm in many senses. But as far as I'm concerned, none of that made it good. I felt like it had no other point other than to show how our relationships work and function when someone is sick, but everything was either predictable or one-dimensional. What's your response to that?
Peter Mark, go.
Well put, I think. I wouldn't maybe phrase it as harshly, but it just, yeah, it was all of those things, but didn't, there wasn't much else to it. Yeah, so I think that's well put. I didn't come away from the movie with a lot, or like it just wasn't, there wasn't much substance to it, I think.
Yeah, my very first question when I walked out was, what was the point of that movie? And I think to the general audience, it would be very cut and dry. It's like, oh, it's someone's struggle with cancer. But that, right. I don't know if that's really what it was. Like, I think it tried to be more than that and never was.
Yeah, absolutely. I had the exact same feeling. And I think the way I phrased it was like, the means were well done, but the end wasn't. And not the end of the movie, but justify the end. And I just felt like the execution was really well done, but the end of it, I just felt like, well, what was the point? Like, scene to scene, you know, better than average, quite good. But the end of it, I was like, well, what was the point of that?
Yeah, I wasn't left wanting at all, really, but it was just like a pleasant movie. Like, I feel like the pieces were in place, but
right.
Yeah, I didn't leave, and it was fine. Like, I wasn't checking my watch throughout the movie, and it was actually very compelling and emotional. I haven't thought about it really too much since, or if we weren't doing the podcast, I wouldn't have thought about it at all.
It's interesting you say, you know, see, I never would have seen this garbage.
Sorry.
It's interesting you say that scene by scene it was good. I don't know if I necessarily agree, but like, I think a lot of people are going to like this movie because of that. You know, it tugs at a lot of emotions because it's funny. And yeah, it's funny because Seth Rogen is funny and he does exactly what we've come to expect from him, which is funny one-liners.
Exactly what we've come to expect from
him. You know, but that aside from that, I like borderline disliked his character and the development of it. But, you know, because it's funny and because there's sad moments, I went to see it with Lydia and she said she cried 7 times, which is, you know, it's just like, well, you know, I didn't cry during it, but I can understand how an audience is going to react that way to it.
You didn't cry?
There's, Not at all. I laughed. Oh. I laughed at like the cancer bits.
Well, why weren't you counting how many times Lydia was crying, Lee?
She told me. She told me she cried seven times.
No, I know. Why weren't you counting? She shouldn't have had to tell you.
Oh, because I was watching the movie. But you know, like I think that a lot of what goes on in this movie is going to dupe people into thinking it's good just because they liked it, and there's a difference. You know, it's one thing to like it because it, you know, made us laugh and made us cry, but it's, I didn't think it was a particularly good movie. I found that it was, you know, sloppily cut together, kind of like with no rhyme or reason to like what he was doing with the camera or what he was doing with his edits. And then, you know, like I said, Rogan was funny, but his character was so one-dimensional. It's just I got so sick of watching him drink and smoke and want to get laid over and over and over again. And then they try to justify that by having a book in his bathroom, but I just didn't buy
it. Yeah, that was a ridiculous little easy bit of exposition right there.
I think for me, this was like the Seth Rogen needle that broke the broke the camel's back. Is it a needle?
Right, yeah.
You'll get it.
Yeah, the needle that broke the
camel's
back.
I'm like, God, more
straw. The straw.
Straw. Thank you. I was mixing my
something minute. Light. Something. You know, easy and light.
Exactly. It was just like same character again. I'm like, yeah, we get it. Seth Rogen. Like he does his laugh. He's very honest. I don't know. So I felt like that was so old and stale. Yeah. Hackney.
I mean,
Seth Rogen.
I liked him, and what I did like about his character was that I found interesting about this movie and unique was how he addressed more directly some of the bad stuff that was going on in Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character's life, like obviously the Bryce Dallas Howard character, another character I wasn't sure why she was there. I mean,
that was the worst part of the movie for me, is her whole storyline, and that was awful, I thought.
I wanted more from it. Like, that sort of summed out how I felt about the movie, was, like, it was well done. Like, you know, I didn't feel she was, like, a hackneyed character. I mean, she was kind of stereotypical in a way, but they had some original moments with it. But I was like, where is this going? Why, like, is this going to go in a way that's not completely predictable? Which it was. I mean, we knew she was going to leave him. We knew she was going to, like, be cheating on him. And then, nothing came of that. Like, it was a puzzle piece in the puzzle, but it wasn't used for any reason, you know? And I couldn't figure it out.
I totally agree with you there. And it's funny. I was so ready to go on the defensive in this podcast because I went to see it with Lydia and her sister, and they both really liked it. And, like, I've read a lot of positive reviews, and I was like, maybe I'm missing something. And I feel like I was going to have to really defend my opinion. But you guys are, like, taking a lot of words out of my mouth with your thoughts and opinions of every aspect of this movie. I just felt like, you know, I call movies lazy a lot of the time. I don't think this movie is necessarily lazy. I think this movie, had, like I said, it had heart and it was smart in some senses, but it just, like, never really had any point to it. It just never seemed to have the right direction. It just was there.
How many times did Lydia's sister cry?
I don't know, but she's, like, 3 days away from having a baby, so some of those cries might not count.
Yeah, she was probably crying the whole time.
Well, yeah, we could point out this was based on a true story, right? Like,
yes.
This hack. And
yeah, to so the writer and Seth Rogen.
You could talk about whether or not this should have been made a movie, but like, so in terms of characters in the story, they were real. That's a reason to be, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder how much of this is true. I'm hard pressed to think that he eventually got together with his therapist, but
yeah.
which I do want to talk about because. While Anna Kendrick's character was possibly the worst therapist, in fact, I pondered perhaps doing like the worst characters who are really, really bad at their job. But at the same time, I thought Anna Kendrick was perhaps the best part of this movie because I thought her character, and while her storyline was additionally predictable, I thought her character was really good. I thought she played it really well.
Hmm. I think she's great. No, she's super compelling. I think I first saw her in Rocket Science, which is, I was looking it up, like, was, like, her third movie. And I've been, like, very aware of her since then. Yeah, I thought she was really good. She's always good.
I saw her in Twilight, the first movie I saw her in.
Gay.
But, Chavin, you sound like you disagree. You didn't like Anna Kendrick in the film.
I did. I don't think her character was fully realized, and I didn't really understand the point of her as well. But, yeah, I mean, she was good. She was great. But
the interesting thing about her thing is that, you know, her relationship with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, I thought was I guess, interesting, and I liked it. I was happy to see it go that direction, and it was, and it was predictable, but that part of the movie didn't feel wrong to me. Like, it seems like a little out there, like that wouldn't happen, or and it was predictable. Like, that felt okay. I was happy that that happened. Like, I felt those two had good chemistry, even if it was, like, an awkward chemistry. So, you know, I don't know. I guess I rooted for those two. That was something that kept me kind of going throughout the movie, was to see what I knew was going to happen with those two.
Right. I thought the therapy sessions could have been written a little bit better. They kind of went the way that I would predict, back and forth with him. But there was some originality with her being sort of in training and whatnot. But
yeah, I would agree with that. Like, at the beginning of them, I felt like, and this is going to go to, like, my same point with Joseph Gordon-Levitt in this movie, who I also had some issue with. But, like, those therapy sessions seemed very stale and, like, unnatural at first, and that was kind of the point, but it wasn't coming across like it was the actors doing that intentionally. It was coming across like it was written poorly. But then I think they found their stride in a way, and you know, as the characters got more comfortable with each other, I think the scenes kind of flowed a little bit better. And I don't know if that was kind of just like a bump in the road with what they were trying to do with them. They were trying to make it uncomfortable and then, like, you know, work a little better, which is probably the case. But, you know, what we ended up with was kind of like, you know, like you said, maybe poorly written dialogue and poorly written moments.
Hmm. What do you think? That's
a good retort.
He kind of, like, saved up his hostility for those times, even though, like, he didn't trust her or feel comfortable there. So maybe that's what felt off about it, because he was very hostile and kind of angry during the therapy sessions. And then the rest of the time, just kind of, like, detached. So that felt a little off watching it to me.
So I kind of have a question for you guys that I've been thinking about the last couple of podcasts. You know, are we – I felt the same – a similar way about Contagion, like, when we were doing that movie. When we were finished with it, you know, again, well executed, et cetera. I know you really liked it, Peter Mark, but I just felt like what was the point? Like, I felt like all the pieces were in the right place and all that, but at the end of the day, I didn't – find the final point to it. But I'm wondering, you know, maybe that's a bad thing that I'm looking for it. I mean, do we need, like you said, like Lydia and her sister enjoyed it and they had a great time and I enjoyed it while I was in there. I mean, are we asking too much for movies? I mean, am I wrong to expect that from people? Or
I don't know. That's a really good question. I've been thinking about the same thing since, and me and Brantley, just the two of us, did the podcast for 30 minutes or less, and that was my exact question about that movie. It was like, what was the point? Was the point of this movie nothing other than to be funny? Because it was funny, but that was it. And the answer is probably yes. Like, and maybe we are, you know, keeping our critics' hats, you know, on a little bit too tight or something, because, you know, maybe there's not supposed to be some, like, not every movie can be, you know, Casablanca. So I think maybe we're being too hard on these movies by saying there needs to be a point. Maybe it was just a funny movie with some heart and, you know, a little bit original because it was about a serious issue. I don't know if there's an answer, or definitely it's not a right answer, but that's kind of my response to that. Hmm. Yeah, so thought-provoking. You guys have no words.
What do you think, Peter Mark?
I'm thinking about what you've said, the words that you said.
He will get back to you next week on the podcast.
if it's compelling, if it says something about, like, the human condition, if it is just funny, I think that's fine. Like, I think you can tell pretty easily whether or not a movie's hollow. So there's that. I don't think either Contagion or 50/50 were hollow. They had their faults. I don't think they're too similar either. So this one I felt like was just a story of something that happens. Like, this is a real story. And then it's just, you know, told as a film. Hmm. And whether or not it was done well, I don't know if it needed to say more than it came to say. I feel like we came to it knowing it's going to be a guy's fight with cancer and just telling that story.
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky. Like, it definitely kind of leaves you knowing that there's something missing from this movie, and you know, I didn't end up seeing Contagion, but perhaps something missing from Contagion that takes it from, you know, a movie that's well made, and, you know, whether or not you know, whether the acting was good in Contagion or it was good in this or it was bad, like, you know, the same things we talk about all the time whether they're good or bad, there's something else there that's missing that's keeping it from being, you know, a top tier film. And, you know, a lot of times those are the hard things to pinpoint, especially when they're not there.
I think perhaps what's missing most from 50/50 was personality from Joseph Gordon-Levitt, or that character, Adam. He was like one-dimensional, like Lee, you said about the film. I felt like he was the engine driving that. You see him sullen, sad, angry, and you don't ever really get to know him the entire film, and you're kind of waiting for that. So at the end, he kind of has like some emotional breakthroughs that touch you as a viewer, but you don't ever get to know him, or really, I don't know, not too invested in his story. What'd you guys think?
Yeah, let's talk about that, because I hadn't really thought of that, but now that you mention it, it's definitely true. Like, he wasn't really like a great character to get behind and root for by any means. My bigger issue was his performance. I mean, he wasn't bad, but Joseph Gordon-Levitt, I think, is one of the most natural and, like, you know, natural actors as far as this, like, you doesn't look like he's acting, especially for his generation. And that's part of what I love about him as an actor. And he just seemed, like, uncomfortable in this movie. Like, he was forcing lines. I felt like he, you know, was handed the script the day of shooting and was still reading off the page a lot of the time. And that's what disappointed me. But now that you bring it up, I definitely agree that his character was definitely kind of, I don't know if one-dimensional is necessarily the word I'd use, but I think he's definitely boring, maybe. Like, he's not somebody that I'd be like, yeah, I hope he doesn't die. I mean, to be honest.
I just found like them going the structure of his character to be interesting, like, and sort of thought provoking, and why they made choices, and that, like, why at the beginning they wanted to paint him as this sort of awkward, weird guy, and then, you know, as the movie got, as they focused more on his relationship with Seth Rogen, you know, he became a little bit more likable and jokey and stuff like that, and I never really, the Bryce Dallas Howard character was just such a mystery to me, and I didn't understand how she worked into it and how she worked into the relationship with him. And, I get that it sort of showed that he was kind of a pathetic character in some ways, but again, like, that seemed to be dropped later, and or I guess maybe he overcame it in a way. I don't know.
Yeah, there are definitely a lot of things that I think they wanted to do with this movie. Like, and it started from the very first shot when, you know, he's looking at the don't walk sign and someone runs right through it, but he waits, and like immediately you're thrown into like the way people, you know, deal with different 50-50 type situations. And then, you know, they have him kind of like decide he's not going to be so straight edged. Once he has cancer, he starts smoking pot, like, and all those things kind of change. But they don't ever change his character in a way that it resonates throughout the rest of the movie. Like, what you end up with is just almost the same character you had, just kind of doing things as opposed to like learning things and changing. You know what I mean? I don't know. Maybe that didn't make like perfect sense. In my head, it did.
Say it again.
All right. I think what they were doing is kind of trying to suggest that his character was changing with things like him starting to smoke marijuana,
right.
The way he relates to Bryce Dallas Howard, especially when she comes back and wants to date him again. You kind of get the impression that the old what's his name in the movie? Adam. The old Adam would have taken her back, but this time he says, "Get the fuck." Fuck off my porch. So
right.
I got nervous about swearing there.
you should be. This isn't your show.
I know. I should really watch my mouth. They won't invite me back. And I think they were trying to like show that, yeah, he's changing. He's becoming a different person. But what I think it ended up being was just like showing these moments of him doing something different. It wasn't really changing his character. I don't think like his character overall changed. I think it was just the same person. The same kind of like dull, insecure, or pathetic, or whatever you want to call him, character, just doing like some things differently, like on a scene by scene basis, not necessarily having those things resonate throughout the whole film and ending at a point where we kind of saw like some emotion pour out at the end. Like, none of the things that he was doing seemed to like be stepping stones towards that point at the end of the movie or the end scenes when it did seem like he was changing and he was reacting and, you know, when he blows up in the car and drives down the wrong way, and then when he, you know, gets really nervous and wants his mom and his dad there before the surgery, and all that stuff. Like, that seemed like there had been something beforehand that led to that, but I think those scenes didn't work that way.
Mm. Again, I think that's the same point about trying to find an end goal or whatever, and it just wasn't there. But, you know, that's fine. Or it's not fine. I think we've decided it's not fine.
Yeah, consensus is it's not fine. Shame on you, Jonathan Levine. Your movie sucks. All right,
I'm going to sound like my dad, but like it didn't feel like the language was necessary. My dad loves to say that about lots of movies.
No, I definitely agree with that, though, about this movie.
But yeah, it's they're talking about dicks and blowjobs, and it's kind of out of nowhere, and it could have been perfectly fine. It felt like it stuck out.
Well, it seemed crude for crude's sake. Like it was like a different movie. It was like you were watching Superbad one scene and then watching Terms of Endearment the next. Like, yeah. Those two movies don't really blend together.
Well, I just thought it'd be an interesting, I think, for those who don't know, 50-50 was kind of, I mean, would you guys call it a drama more or a comedy more? I mean, the point is that they were sort of mixed, and that you had some serious subjects, but a lot of it, I mean, most of the people in the theater I was in were laughing a lot of the time. And so I thought it'd be interesting to take a look at that.
Yeah, I mean, to answer your question, I definitely think this movie is a drama that has funny moments. And I think that's the way it was. Anything else, because this movie is not in any way like in poor taste. Like, you know, you say it's a comedy about cancer, like it's not in poor taste at all, and it that never once was it. So I think it's a drama about, you know, a life-threatening illness that has funny moments, and I think if it was the other way around, I think if this was a comedy about cancer, you know, and just that, then maybe it would deal with some you know, critics saying it's in poor taste. But no, like, this movie is a drama that has funny moments.
I like movies like this. I mean, obviously, I do
too. Generally, movie, I do.
But I like the mixture. I mean, it seems real to me. It seems when movies are too, you know, too roped this into coming, their own.
By the way, this coming from the director of Last September and The Gray Area.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. Fuck off, that's what I was gonna say. Was that our two movies have pretty serious subject matter, but I think we both tried to work comedy. Maybe me a little bit less effectively, according to you, into the movie. In that, so you would have some realistic bonding moments. That was our goal, at least, between the two characters. I mean, and Lee, you guys were making a movie about a guy basically going crazy and paranoid and killing his neighbors. But you know,
spoilers.
A good spoiler alert. A good 20 minutes of the movie is. Jeremy walking around with his buddy, and they're cracking jokes the whole time, or at least the other guy is. So you had to one turn off one of the funniest guys we knew in Jeremy being a very serious character. I mean, is that what you feel the reason for you having comedy in Through the Woods was for?
Yeah, I mean, it was mostly our reason for having Alex, who played. Oh Christ, what the hell is the character's name? who plays Eric was to, because we had to make sure that Jeremy's character was not, that was somewhat, if not likable, at least like understandable and like relatable in some way. Like we couldn't, our audience couldn't hate Jeremy's character. Otherwise, what's the point of watching that movie? Because it's pretty much all him throughout the movie. So the point of him was to kind of show a relationship with somebody that's normal. And you know, we struggled with keeping Alex off the screen because we couldn't have him on it too much because he was kind of taking over. But it was just a lot of fun. And I think that was the whole point of adding him to the movie, was to make sure that, like, there is some human element to the character of John, who Jeremy plays. He's not just, like, a crazy psycho with no personality. And it also, our intention, whether or not it came across, was to show that, you know, at one time or another, perhaps when he was in college, when he was friends with Eric and closer with Eric and lived that life, that he kind of lived a normal life. Like, he doesn't come from some, like, psychotic background, you know? But, yeah, that's the answer to your question. That's where that came from.
Right. Well,
brilliant, really.
Okay, so do you guys feel that that's ever been done ineffectively? Meaning the combination of the two, has it ever affected the one affected the other? Meaning, like in the case of 50-50, would the comedy detract from the drama? Or have we ever been in a comedy where the drama detracted from the comedy, etc.?
Well, a movie, it's kind of a funny story. I think we talked about it on the podcast. I think had a pretty at length discussion about it because that was kind of the same deal with like it dealt with kind of serious situations of being in like a mental hospital and dealing with those kinds of issues. But yet it was a comedy. It had Zach Galifianakis in it. And I just thought that movie was never funny. And it was part of what hurt the movie. I don't know if it's necessarily like, I don't know. I don't know if the attempt at comedy hurt the movie, but I just never thought it was funny. Like, so in that sense, it didn't work. I don't know if that's exactly what you're looking for, but
no,
that's what came to my mind.
I think so. I mean, I think, yeah. What about you, Peter Mark?
I mean,
I haven't seen that actually.
Well, any examples?
Of it not working out?
Or when you thought it worked out effectively. I mean, Lee and I brought up the examples of the movies we directed, so exactly. I mean, that's pretty...
Obviously, they worked out great.
Yeah, I haven't made it.
It's like, I haven't seen those either.
I think it's necessary. It makes sense. So I think a lot of times in dramas or in serious movies like that deal with disease, illness or disease, there needs to be like the icebreaker or like a tension reliever. And a lot of times they do that through heartwarming scenes or just like casual scenes or montages even. I think it's a more recent trend doing like dramedies where it's actual humor blended in. A lot of times it's done like more through like irony or ironic scenes. I don't know. I feel like it's been done well a lot. Nothing comes to mind right now. I'll think about it though.
Are you in agreement that it's effective? I mean that's a helpful.
Absolutely. I think it's necessary.
Yeah.
Because you can't just keep building tension. If it's a movie about cancer, it can't just be like a giant, horrible, sad story for like an hour and a half or 2 hours. Nobody's going to want to sit through that. So it's necessary. Yeah.
Well, I think something important to bring up as we're having this discussion is that, you know, we all kind of, you know, 50-50 was somewhat of a middle of the road type movie, and we said at the end like the comedy, like the Seth Rogen type comedy with all the language and the dicks and blowjobs and stuff, it felt out of place in this movie. And you know, we're saying there needs to be some sort of an outlet with these depression movies. And Peter Mark, you say it's usually like a heartwarming scene or a montage, and those seem to be like that's what seem to be the norm. That's what we get. And 50-50 maybe tries something different with the type of comedy it has, and I don't think it did work. So maybe it's not the way to go to kind of have a, you know, the type of comedy that Seth Rogen is known for, the super bad type comedy, mixed with these kinds of movies. Maybe it is more effective to have that outlet be the heartwarming scene and or you know even like the lighthearted relationship as opposed to a straight out comedy.
I think 50-50. Had a lot of comedy that worked. There was just also that dick and fart humor added in. Like, there was plenty of humor that was genuinely funny. Just that part seemed out of place.
Yeah, so, I agree with that.
Okay. I will say the movie totally got me. It sounds like you guys were kind of standoffish and critical, but like I would seriously from like the
what,
scene on, I had tears like rolling down my cheeks.
I mean, yeah, I was totally wrapped up in it as it was happening. That's what I was trying to say. Like in my question in the first segment was that, you know, again, I mean, I think it had me from the start to finish, but you know,
did it have you at hello?
It had me at hello. And then, it, you know, I said goodbye and I never thought about it again.
Kind of same way we kind of feel about Jerry Maguire.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but for me, like by the end, I was kind of fed up with the movie, so I wasn't allowing my emotions to get to me at any point in the movie. You know, that's cold hearted, stale me. So
that is some cold shit.
I'm a robot. but yeah, I mean, as far, you know, back to the point of, you know, comedy within a drama and stuff. Like, I love it. I mean, I love a comedy. I was really excited about 50-50. I thought it was a really smart idea. As actors I love, I was immensely disappointed with the movie, which isn't to say that it was horrible. It's just to say I expected a lot better. But that's because, like, I think that comedy within the drama can really work. And, you know, some of my favorite movies are that. Like, you look at a movie like Sideways. You could categorize that as a comedy or a drama, and I think it's because both elements work.
I'd say Philip Baker Hall was pretty awesome in this movie too. He helped with the comedy.
Yeah, again, but why was he there? Like,
Did you feel like he was out of place?
I didn't feel like he was out of place, but it was again something you would I was expecting more from. You know, I was they introduced it, and then it sort of wrapped up really quickly.
Yeah, and even his line of dialogue is even – it kind of sums up the whole movie. Like, he's like, how did he die? He was fine the other day. And he's just like, what the hell difference does it make? He's dead.
Yeah.
His heart stopped. And I'm like, good point. Well, what the hell difference does it make? So what are you trying to say with this character then? Like, well, he may be right. Like, what difference does it make? His heart stopped. That may be this character's attitude. But that's starting to become my attitude about this movie.
Oh, wow.
I hate you. All right. Sorry. Sometimes I get wrapped up.
Oh.
God.
I like doing the podcast at night because I can drink while I'm doing them.
Oh, is that what's happening?
Is this at a beers?
Did you guys ever see Secret Honor? Not to go off on a tangent. But
Secret Honor?
Yeah, it was a 1984 Robert Altman. And Philip Baker Hall plays Richard Nixon. And it's just like him in a room. The entire movie, just him. Like carrying the whole story. I was pretty sold since I saw that.
He's been in some great movies, and he's been great in some bad movies too. Like, he's great. I love him in The Rock. Like, what he says, I gotta get up four times a night to take a piss. love that line.
Nice.
I've been quoting The Rock a lot in these podcasts.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I listen to the Contagion podcast with you two and Brantley, and your top five was top five disasters, and it was just like an homage to Michael Bay and Roland Emmerich, and I almost vomited in my mouth 15 times with each of your picks.
Sorry, we're not super pretentious, and I have to let you like, the 1940s. Oh yeah, because nobody believed what the special effects back then.
My favorite disaster film is the original The Day the Earth Stood Still. So.
Oh God!
All right, so we're running short here, but we'll move on to our top fives and
see already
where we're at.
I have a good list, I think.
Yeah, you
good, because I don't think I'm disappointed in my list this week. All right, why don't you intro so that you can go last and finish the podcast on a good note? Because mine's not that good.
Oh, thanks. Okay. All right, top five films. This week we're doing movies.
Yep, we're doing top five films
of all time. No, but the deal with disease, illness, like 50-50 did. You could kind of take this in a lot of different directions or just generally. So, Lee, you want to start? Any qualifications for your list?
No, not really. I wanted to kind of stick with like physical illnesses, but I didn't end up doing that. I threw some mental illness movies in there. It was actually kind of difficult when I was researching, because a lot of stuff that was coming up was like mental disorders and not necessarily like mental illnesses. Like, there are movies like What's Eating Gilbert Grape and autism movies, and which I guess technically is not a mental illness. Either way, since I'm boring the hell out of everybody, my number five is less of a you know, a great movie about illnesses as much as it's a credit to the actor in it, Kevin Kline. It's Life as a House. A movie I liked the first time I saw it, but you know, the more I see it, the less I'd like it. But I think Kevin Kline is great in that movie and saves it and makes it worth watching. And he's obviously dying of cancer in the film and is trying to reconnect with his son by building a house. Even as I talk about the plot, it sounds a little strange, but Kevin Kline is great in that movie, so it's my number five.
Nice.
That was my number four, in fact. I'll talk about it more, though. But Chapin, how about you? What's your number five?
My number five is not a great movie, but one that's a little bit close to my heart because I was in the play. It was a play before it was a movie, and I played the Leonardo DiCaprio part, and it's Marvin's Room. Marvin's room, and it's about Leonardo DiCaprio is like some mental patient, and his mom is Meryl Streep, and they go to visit Meryl Streep's sister, who's Diane Keaton, who's dying of cancer, and Robert De Niro is her doctor. So, very prestigious cast, but you know, not an incredibly well known movie, but you know, pretty good.
So you were in a play with Meryl Streep and Robert De Niro.
Yep, as Leonardo DiCaprio as Marvin.
Nice.
David Hemingway as Leonardo DiCaprio as Marvin.
It wasn't Marvin. Marvin was somebody else. I don't remember his name.
Oh, you were just staying in his room.
Yeah.
All right, moving on.
All right, I'm going to switch mine around for number 4 and 5 since we were talking about Life is a House. That was my number 5 now. And I haven't seen it for a while, so maybe it doesn't age as well. What stood out for me about that film, actually, interestingly, is how it dealt with a lot of adult issues. Kind of like an inverted 50-50, there's a lot of like adult themes like drugs and there's like prostitution. It felt very real and serious. And that worked for me. Like, it was kind of like a pleasant story about like a dad and his son reconnecting through cancer. But it brought a lot of harsh reality to it.
All right. My number 4 is definitely the most obvious pick. I didn't want to include it because it's so obvious, but it's Philadelphia. I mean, it's great performances from Tom Hanks and one of my favorite actors, Denzel Washington. But it's also a movie that I've never been in love with, but you know, it's definitely a movie about illnesses. It's kind of the quintessential movie about illnesses with, you know, really standout performances.
That may come up later.
Twice.
Fuck.
In fact. Well, it is I think it's the best and the most famous illness movie.
Yeah, I agree.
Is it my turn?
Yep.
Okay, my number 4. This is kind of a weird pick. It's not all about illness, but it's Milos Forman's Man on the Moon. And it's about Andy Kaufman, and he eventually gets cancer and dies. And, you know, the whole movie isn't about the illness, but when he does get sick, it has a pretty profound effect, and that's what I remember about that movie and Jim Carrey's performance is he just sort of, like, he goes around to all these sort of what I guess he eventually finds out are fakes, but, you know, healers around the world who are trying to do, you know, heal him. And it's just an interesting look at illness because this guy is sort of indefeatable in the whole movie and no one can figure him out. And then he's just like suddenly stricken by this thing that's going to end him. And I don't know. I found it fascinating.
That's a good pick. I didn't even think of it. That's a good pick.
I haven't seen it actually. So nice.
All right.
All right, my number 4 is Wit from 2001. Yep. It's directed by Mike Nichols. It's about Emma Thompson, who gets ovarian cancer. It was a made-for-TV movie. It was on HBO. Really excellent. I like Emma Thompson a lot. I'm a big fan. She does a really great job. She might have won something for it, actually.
Yeah, it's based on a play, which I actually saw. That was really good.
Oh, really?
You played the Emma Thompson role.
I played Emma Thompson in Wit as Emma Thompson.
And Christopher Lloyd. Nothing like a good Christopher Lloyd movie.
All right, Lee, you're up.
I never heard of that movie. I might have to look into it. All right, my number 3. Go ahead.
That's all. HBO does a lot of TV movies that kind of go under the radar sometimes. By me, anyway.
They usually seem to get like really top notch performances too.
Like Angels in America.
Don't say that.
Yeah.
All right. Why don't you guys just do my list for me since you've called 3 of my 5? So
fuck.
Oh.
Okay.
All right.
Go,
my number
4.
3 is. It's my turn. It's number 3. It's Pride of the Yankees with Gary Cooper.
That's a bad pick because it was mentioned last week.
I know it was, but I even thought about that, but, you know, I wasn't on the podcast. Wait, yeah, I was.
Yeah, you were.
Oh, man.
What's going on with you?
God, I suck at this job. I know it was on the podcast last week, but it was on the podcast last week for a totally different reason. And I think that the whole story of Lou Gehrig is a really interesting one. And that's why I wanted to include it.
Good, good.
You know, the disease was named after him.
Yeah. What are the chances of that? Okay. My number three is a little bit of an odd pick, but again, it's something that I remember from the movie profoundly because, well, I just recently watched it again, but also it stuck out a lot for me. But it's Watchmen, and cancer plays a pretty significant role in that story. I don't know if you guys remember that, but a lot of people are given cancer, and a lot of people get cancer because they, at least as a ploy to convince them that Dr. Manhattan is giving people cancer. And I really like that because it's like real life mixed in with superheroes. So that's my number three.
I didn't see that movie.
You haven't seen the Watchmen?
So I know nothing about it. Like I don't know anything about the comic or.
That's pretty good.
Or I never saw the movie. I heard such bad things about it, so I avoided it.
Hmm.
But on your recommendation, I'll throw it on the quickster queue.
God, my stock is so far down. It's terrible.
When is that official? Anyway,
I don't know. And I don't know if it happened. Does it happen like immediately? Does Netflix queues just disappear? Do I have to like pay close attention? I don't know. They're giving you very little information about it.
All right, my number three, already said Philadelphia. Jonathan Demme is a great director. I thought it was a pretty important movie. AIDS had been around for a while then, and I guess the gay community had too, but for the mainstream, it spoke a lot to both, I think. Watching it at my house, I feel like we hadn't talked about AIDS or gay people. And it was very powerful. It was well done.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a movie I need to revisit. I remember just the highlight of it being those scenes you see all the time with Hank just kind of like standing outside the office staring like with nobody around him. And I remember the, like those performances being powerful and you know, it makes sense why. The movie overall, I never was a huge fan of. I just think I definitely think you're right about that. It's an important movie.
Yeah. First time, sure.
All right. My number two is Shutter Island with Leo's mental illness. A movie that kind of like I was going to put it higher on my list because I wanted to avoid mental illnesses, but then I was like, you know what? This movie is awesome. And, you know, what Leo has in this is as much an illness as Tom Hanks in Philadelphia. Ooh, even if it's not fatal.
That's PC.
Even if it's not fatal.
That's PC of you.
Is it not? Are you being sarcastic?
No, it is. It's accepting of mental illness as real illness.
Right. I mean, my point is that Shutter Island should be in this conversation, I think, as we talk about movies about illnesses. Especially, you know, the conversations had about, you know, the treatment of those types of illnesses that are had throughout with in the different ways that it's done with Ben Kingsley and Max von Sydow. And it's a great movie. So yep. It's my number two.
All right. My number two is a hugely underrated movie in my opinion. I think Lee, you're gonna probably disagree with me pretty badly here, but it's Judd Apatow's Funny People. I really, really liked this movie. I thought it was a deconstruction of comedy and stand-up, and it's all about him getting sick, but once he realizes that he isn't sick or he's recovered, spoiler alert, there's a whole nother 40 minutes of the movie, which, Lee, I know you weren't crazy about, but and I thought that was really interesting, like what it's like to get over being really sick, and it's not something we've seen done before, and I don't know, just a unique look at it, and similar feel to 50-50.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a fitting pick in honor of 50-50. I just thought that movie wasn't particularly funny. I think it came up on our one-time top five of comedies that aren't funny, but I mean, it makes sense, I think, to have that on there. I wouldn't put it on this top five, but I understand why you did.
I didn't even think of it, actually. It's a decent pick. I think that's a good one, talking about like how people grow from the illness. So like he has it and he starts to grow, then he doesn't have it anymore. And where are you left? Like, are you still going to be a shitty person? Or are you going to be a better person? And they talked about, I felt like they worked through that well in that movie. Good pick.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Shut up, Lee. We know you don't like that movie. I knew you were going to give me shit for it when I put it on there. So predictable.
Kind of like 50-50.
Oh,
Okay. In your right. face, 50-50.
My number two, The Cure from 1995. This was a childhood staple. It was with Brad Renfro and Joseph Mazzello, who he was like a huge child star, kind of. He's done some army movies since. So he was in Radio Flyer, The River Wild, Jurassic Park. And then he was in The Pacific briefly and The Thin Red Line also briefly. Remember the kid? He has red hair.
Everybody in The Thin Red Line was in there briefly.
Yeah, fair enough. It's about a little kid who has cancer and his neighbor, and they like go down the river looking for a cure.
He has AIDS.
He has AIDS?
Yep.
I hate AIDS.
Yep.
They're the worst.
Anyway, so yeah, cute movie. That's my number two.
Oh, that's the kid from Social Network.
Yes.
Yes.
I never heard of that movie.
Yeah, I only heard of it because I saw it because it was like exactly a movie that I like came up with when I was like 10.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right, my number one is Magnolia, Paul Thomas Anderson's film that, and specifically I was going with Jason Robards' character, however you also have Philip Baker Hall, who is dying of cancer in the film. So, and there's, you know, that blow-up scene with Julianne Moore when she, insert clip here, I have sickness all around me, you know, definitely a heavy movie as far as the illnesses go and the dying characters. What is it? You like that movie, Chapin.
Overrated.
No, wrong. Awesome is the word you were looking for.
Okay.
I think that was a nice tie-in with the Philip Baker Hall, too.
Yeah. So
good to come see what I did there? That was my whole plan all along.
Nice. Well done.
Yeah.
My number one, it's been said a couple times before, Philadelphia. This movie had a profound effect on me when I was a kid. Like, it got me way interested in AIDS and the gay rights movement, and don't laugh, Lee. That's definitely not PC.
No, I'm just laughing at hearing you say you're getting into the gay movement.
I started going to clubs really late, wearing mesh t-shirts and stuff like that. No, I remember just it being like my favorite movie at the time, and I saw it in the theater, and I was like obsessed. And then I watched it recently again, and it holds up, and it's great for a whole different bunch of reasons. I mean, Jonathan Demme is like such a powerful filmmaker when he puts his mind to it. You know, with the he does that thing where they break the fourth wall. Like he has characters look right into the camera, and that movie is full of stuff like that, and it's incredibly powerful. And that's my number one.
I gotta see this movie again.
Yeah, you don't remember that when they're like. The whole movie is them like looking right into the camera.
Yeah, but isn't it like stock? Isn't it like stock footage style?
No. Denzel Washington is looking like right into the camera as he talks, and then they'll reverse to Tom Hanks, and he'll be looking right into the camera.
I don't remember.
Yeah,
I don't know. All right, my number one, Angels in America. It was mentioned. Thanks, Jade.
I'm sorry.
Nothing. 2003, directed by Mike Nichols, another great director. This was based on a play, and it's very theatrical, but huge ensemble cast from Al Pacino, Meryl Streep, Emma Thompson, Jeffrey Wright, Mary Louise Parker, Patrick Wilson also, who I thought stole the show. Like since watching that, I like had my eye on him for every movie he's done since, for better or worse.
Miniseries? Was it a miniseries or a movie? I remember it. I never
saw it. So I'm kind of breaking the... Yeah, it was a miniseries.
Didn't count it. But
probably, I thought one of the best things dealing with illness, and this was AIDS in this case.
Yeah, I didn't catch it. I remember all the talk about it, and I remember when it was on and everything, and I actually remember wanting to see it. I didn't have HBO, and never have, so I miss all these...
Definitely. Yeah, definitely check it out. It's very surreal and theatrical. Excellent performances by everybody.
How was Al Pacino? I heard mixed things about him in that movie.
Overacting. Is he an overactor? I feel like
they said that's the critique on him. I don't necessarily think it's always true, but
yeah, he's like a closet. He gets AIDS, but he's like a really powerful New York. I don't remember if he's a lawyer.
Yeah, he plays Roy Cohn.
Thank you. Yeah, he's. He was good. He didn't stick out as being bad for me. He wasn't my favorite. I thought Jeffrey Wright, who amazing actor, was really good. Patrick Wilson, who I thought was really good, but he's been in some shitty things more recently.
How about Meryl Streep?
Meryl Streep was good. She plays Chapin, and if you're looking it up, you can probably find it. She plays a ghost in it.
Right.
Ethel Rosenberg, who comes and haunts Al Pacino, and she's excellent, too.
Hmm. Now, Meryl Streep, she's the one that... Well, she's the actress that's... she's,
has she been nominated before?
Remind me. You got
another great from that was Ben Shankman, who I haven't seen around as much, but he pops up occasionally. A lot of failed pilots. He's in the Paul Reiser show recently. Yeah, it's just full of excellent performances. Definitely check it out, everybody.
Yeah.
All right, definitely an interesting top five. A lot of repeats there, unfortunately.
Okay, well, that'll wrap us up with the Get Your Film Fix podcast. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Again, I'd like to thank Chapin for coming over to join us. Peter Mark, thank you, as always. You've been a admirable fill-in for us lazy bastards.
Have I been a rock for you guys?
Yeah, you have been. I mean, essentially, you should feel completely responsible for getting the podcast out every week, because we're certainly having a hard time doing it on our own. Again, we'd like to encourage everybody to surf their way over to getyourfilmfix.com and donate and do nothing else. Actually, check out our articles. A lot of good articles going up. Subscribe. Get those articles emailed to you so you don't even have to do the surfing. You just click on a link and head on over there. Nice. And continue to check out the podcast. Be sure to check out exteriorfilms.com and By the Gray Area. Chapin, I know you'll appreciate that.
Yep, I will. Money in my pocket, baby.
I'm staying. I'm finishing my coffee. Enjoying my coffee.
Does she know about you and me?
Yeah, no, and she doesn't know about the perv thing either, so let's not tell her that either.
Why?
Shaving the perv.
She has to understand our relationship and how it began and where it's been.
Yeah, that's true.